They're eating their pots, their kippahs, the lion, or their whatever.
Okay, good morning. Today we have on the agenda to discuss a number of different reasons for muktzah. Again, what we've seen so far, as we've gone through the parak, was the reason of the Chayei Adam, who said that Shabbos is not a time for planning, it's not a time for preparation, but rather it's a time for implementation, and therefore all the planning must be done before Shabbos. If you want to designate a rack, right, as something that you can move, you got to do that before Shabbos. If you want to take something that's muktzah machmas kesron kis, right, let's say like a passport, and say, you know something, it's not muktzah machmas kesron kis for Shabbos, right, I'm going to be using it, I'm going to be walking around with it in my pocket in case I need ID or something like that, that must be done, right, before Shabbos, and so on and so forth. If something, the garbage pill is a busis, right, on Beit HaShemashos, so then it remains a busis the whole Shabbos. If the garbage pill is properly prepared, right, so then it stops being a busis. It stops being a basis, right, because it was properly prepared. So the Chayyadim's basic idea is that the purpose of muktzah is to encourage and inspire us to prepare for Shabbos, so that Shabbos can be a day that's about enjoying the fruits of our preparation. We also saw the reason that we're going to see again in the Rambam, Gzeira Shema Yitka, that there are certain things that are muktzah, because we're concerned that if we're allowed to move them around, then we'll eventually come to transgress Malacha. So you're not allowed to move around, let's say, broken eyeglasses if you have the screwdriver and you have the screw and you have the lens, right? Because we're nervous that if you move around those things, then you may come to repair the eyeglasses. And the same for any sort of broken chair, right, or other broken item which is relatively easy to repair, and which it's, needs to be screwed in tightly in order to be fully functional. We're again concerned Gzeira Shema Yitka, so there is a category of muktzah which is forbidden out of concern that you might end up doing malacha. Now the Ravid, which we're not going to see today, expands that, and he says maybe everything that's muktzah is asur because you may carry it outside of an eruv. That is a Gemara on that Kukhaf Dalet Amud Beis, which we'll probably see next week or the week after that. And so there definitely is this idea which expands the concern, right, for malacha, saying that you can't move anything unnecessarily. And some things you can't even move with good cause because of concern that you might end up carrying it outside of an Eruv. So today I want to take a quick look at the Rambam's formulation. And as we read the Rambam, we should consider questions 65 through 69. So again, let's just go through the questions and then we'll read the Rambam and try to catch the answers.
Page 5 and 6.
No, it looks like my printer ran out of ink at that point.
Page 6.
Yeah, so. Okay, so if you don't have it, then perhaps share with your neighbor. Okay, but you're smart enough. You can be mechaving to the questions. You can be mechaving to the questions. You're bright enough. I need to. Yes, I'll put that on my list. Maybe on my way back. Okay, so the Rambam acknowledges that Shabbos can sometimes be boring. So we want to find where he acknowledges that. Again, I mentioned that 4 years ago, before I got classroom experience, I totally would have glossed over this line of the Rambam as a lamdan. Right? It's not necessarily the most important line. But in terms of making the Rambam relatable, right? If the Rambam were a politician, right, and he were campaigning, right, so this would be a very important line, right, for the Rambam. I know that Shabbos can be boring, and my heart is with you. What are you going to do that whole long afternoon? Many of your regular pursuits, right, are denied to you, right, but at the same time, you have to be cautious that you don't let that boredom lead you to wasting the Shabbos. Shabbos is something that's meant to be spent. Right, so we'll talk a little bit more about this. I think that Rav Pinkus brings down in his book Shabbos Malkasa that there was a holy Jew, I think actually in New York State, who used to nap on Erev Shabbos and then stay up for all 25 hours of Shabbos, because he said that an hour of Shabbos is too precious to waste in sleep. Shabbos gives a certain type of inspiration, a certain type of insight, right, to those who are searching for it, and people who cherish, you know, the feeling of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the self-insight and insight into the world, right, and insight into, you know, purpose of life that that brings along, right, will find an extra measure of He'ara, from the word or, right, of enlightenment, right, on Shabbos. And so this was a holy Jew who said, I can't even waste a single, you know, instance of Shabbos even sleeping, because I want to cherish and soak up as much of that enlightenment as possible. So again, you have this idea that the rest of Shabbos could be used to achieve this enlightenment, to deepen and strengthen the relationship, you know, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But at the same time, right, a person who doesn't know how to appreciate that, or doesn't know how to fully appreciate it yet, or appreciate it all the time, will definitely end up with difficulties, potential difficulties when Shabbos comes. And so the laws of Muktzah, the Rambam is going to tell us, are going to serve as somewhat of an antidote to these difficulties. Furthermore, 66, the Rambam, what is the Rambam worried, right, that boredom will lead to? 67, it's important to feel that Shabbos is special and to broadcast that Shabbos is special. So the feeling that Shabbos is special is purely internal, right, to me. I need to have this feeling, right, that Shabbos is a different day than the rest of the week, that there's something unique about Shabbos, something that I should strive to unlock, something that I should strive to feel, to appreciate, to articulate, you know, what it is, regardless of whether other people can tell their Shabbos is special or not, right? That's something which is important for every individual Jew to feel. When the Gemara says that Shabbos is a matana tova, that it's a good gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave, right, to Klal Yisrael, so it's important for everybody to be able to explain, right, to themselves, right, well, why is Shabbos such an amazing gift, right? That's something which is very important to be able to articulate the answer to. And so in order to reinforce this awareness within us, right, the Rambam's going to say that that Hilchos Muktzah helps us appreciate and reinforces our awareness that Shabbos is a special day. But it's not simply something that reinforces our own awareness, right? Because on Shabbos, we're not simply supposed to feel that it's a special day, but we're supposed to broadcast that it's a special day. We're supposed to tell others, right, and sort of message others, right, but not in the forbidden way of messaging, right, but we're supposed to sort of give that sort of vibe, right, that, you know, today is a special day. Let's all, right, get on the bandwagon. And so that's what broadcasting is. We're supposed to make others aware that Shabbos is a special day as well. And we're going to look for where the Rambam says that it's important to broadcast this. And again, he also says that Muktzah plays a role, right, in promoting a communal awareness of the specialness of Shabbos. Call it the early Kiruv, if you will, right, as well. That the way that we act on Shabbos, what we move, how we talk, and, you know, how we walk, right, and things like that, those all help communicate an awareness even to those who perhaps, you know, don't yet fully appreciate, right, the beauty of Shabbos, right, but the way that we conduct ourselves is something that broadcasts. This is a special day. It's something that's worth aspiring to. And then finally, 69, moving Muktzah may lead to Malacha. Where does the Rambam say this? Okay, so now we have kind of basically what we're going to be looking for in the Rambam. So let's actually read it inside. I'm just going to read the English. Although at some point we'll refer back to the Hebrew. The rabbi said not to move certain things on Shabbos the same way we would move them during the week. Why?
Answer 69. That tells you right away, answer to 69. Don't move things.
Well, why not? And he's going to give us three answers. So they said, if the Nevi'im told us not to walk on Shabbos the way that we walk during the week, in other words, right, during the week we might take, you know, long steps, right, on Shabbos, we're supposed to take a short step. Now, I have a pet peeve, right? I think, you know, some people think that this means on Shabbos you're not supposed to walk fast, right? But I don't think that that's at all what the Gemara means or what the Nevi'im mean. I think what it means is that you're not supposed to take wide steps on Shabbos the way that you take wide steps during the week. But the secret to walking fast is not taking wide steps. The secret to walking fast is simply picking up your second foot as soon as possible after putting the first foot down. So you can walk sometimes even much faster just walking heel to toe, as long as you pick your feet up quickly, and as opposed to walking very, very slowly, and if you don't pick up your feet quickly, even if you take wide steps. The idea, I think, is that it's supposed to be more tzniutzik day
no
than...
Jesus,
No yes visas on Shabbos. Walk as quickly as you want. Just don't take wide steps like this. Right? That's not as dignified. That's not as dignified. Right? Shabbos is a day that enhances the dignity of Klal Yisrael. Right? There's Neshama Yisera. Right? The way that Rabbi Yitzchak Cohen, right, likes to say it over from his Rebbe, the previous Mashkiach of YU, Rav Lessin. Right? He says that on Shabbos, every Jew becomes a Himmel Mensch. Right? Or a Himmel Prince. Right? Or something along those lines. Right, that you become a prince of heaven on Shabbos. You become an ambassador. You become royalty. You become nobility. Right, you become right super upper class. Kol Yisrael b'nei Melachim Haim right on Shabbos, and therefore he says, just like the Queen of England when she blows her nose, right, she doesn't put the tissue in her pocket, right, but she hands the tissue right to a butler. So he says the same thing that there's this idea hotzah on Shabbos. You don't carry right a dirty tissue. Right for no reason. He says because on Shabbos you're a Himmel Mensch, right? You're a heavenly prince, and so you have to behave with all of the manners of royalty. We'll see that Hilchos Muktzah plays into that as well. It's not so clear that we're allowed to move dirty tissues more than is necessary. But so that's not walking on Shabbos the way that we walk during the week, and not talking on Shabbos the way that we talk. Right, during the week. Again, right, we're not supposed to talk about business matters. We're not supposed to talk about things that make us sad. We're not supposed to talk about melachas that we're going to do after Shabbos. Right? That one is very, very difficult, but that's the rule of the daber davar, that your dibur, your speech on Shabbos is supposed to be different. Right? There's no business, no sad talk, right? And ideally, right, no talk about melachos that we'll do after Shabbos. I'll call you after Shabbos. I'll email you after Shabbos. I'll drive over on Wednesday. Right? These are all perhaps things that we shouldn't be saying on Shabbos, phrases that we should eliminate from our Shabbos vocabulary, because right, meaning you could say to somebody, oh, you know, I'll see you on Wednesday, and obviously I'm going to drive there, but mentioning the word drive, right, perhaps impacts in a negative way on the spirit, the ambiance of of Shabbos, the same way that you could be sitting right then at a table, right, and then say something like, okay, that's not really meal time talk. So there's such a thing as not Shabbos time talk. Yes.
Is Shabbos chazon any different
in terms of dibur?
Are you, in other words, are you allowed to learn bar kamsa after chatzos on Shabbos?
Oh, meaning can you learn sad things on Shabbos Chazon?
We have an entire seal on Monday. It depends who you are. Is it really Tisha B'Av, or it was totally taken out and it's Sunday is the Tisha B'Av? So there are many ramifications on
it's not Shabbos though.
Some people said
Shabbos supersedes Tisha B'Av.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rabbi Soloveitchik was very, very lenient on all shilos about learning Torah on Tisha B'Av. It's definitely true that Torah has the potential to distract us, right, from being in the right state of mind, and it's definitely true also that Torah has the potential to cheer us up on a day that the emotion that's supposed to be dominant is sadness. But at the same time, very often, again, I would appeal to the Rambam, most people, I'm afraid, don't really get into the correct state of mind on Tisha B'Av, and like Lechora, it's better to be distracted by Torah and Kamsa Bar Kamsa than it is to be distracted by something else. So in general, I would be permissive in terms of studying on Shabbos Chazon. And then the question is, what about studying sad things? What about studying sad things which ordinarily we're not supposed to study? So I think that Torah has this combination, right, that it's happy and sad, right? And as a result of that, right, there are certain, these parts of Torah which are sad, but they're also happy, so they can be studied on Tisha B'Av. I think they can be studied on Shabbos as well. The question is, Rabbi Yaakov Emden has a discussion about studying about Jewish catastrophes on Shabbos. Yeah. Again, Torah has the capacity both to gladden the heart, right, and certain parts of Torah to sadden the heart as well. The Gemara even discusses what about that when you're first, you know, tackling a sugya, right, you might experience a tremendous amount of frustration, an amount of, you know, like there's so many kashas, and I, you know, and I don't have the answer, and maybe I've even been spending a couple of hours and I don't have the answer, right? There's sometimes frustration, there's sometimes a sense of being overwhelmed, right, with like just there's so much information here, there's so much to research, there's so much to read, right? These are all very unpleasant sensations that resolve themselves when a person has had enough time to spend with the sugya. And so the Gemara is, you know, aware of this double-edged, you know, nature, right, of learning, that at certain times it's more pleasant, right, at other times it's perhaps more frustrating and overwhelming. And so I think that because of this, you know, double nature, so that generates certain leniencies when it comes to learning sad Torah on Shabbos, or happier, or relatively happier. I mean, you can't learn happy Torah on Tisha B'Av, right? But you know, like Chaim Ovadia Yosef says, you can learn a little bit the Iyun, right? The sad parts, which is sometimes something a little bit more cheering. But you know, the Ma'aseh that has Torah has both of these abilities. Yes.
The Yofkos program, one of my friends' son is making a very nice dish.
Right. Okay. It's Dvarim, you know, Dvarim Shabbat Farhesia. If it's public, so then you got to just treat it like regular Shabbos. If the wedding is scheduled for the week afterwards, so then on Shabbos you behave regular in public, definitely. So again, there's no the idea is that we walk differently on Shabbos. And we take more dignified steps. We talk differently on Shabbos. And we try to talk in a way that sort of contributes, right, you know, if you will, the romantic, you know, atmosphere between Klal Yisrael and Avinu Shebashamayim. And finally, the Rambam says, so Kal v'chomer, if you walk differently on Shabbos and you talk differently on Shabbos, then you should also move things differently on Shabbos as well. And certainly, we shouldn't move things on Shabbos the way that we move things during the week, because I believe the Rambam is going to say that moving things has more potential to disrupt the atmosphere of Shabbos than simply walking does and talking does. The Rambam continues and says this is to ensure that a person doesn't feel like Shabbos is just another weekday. Right? The Hebrew for that is exactly. The key word being be'inav, right, in your own eyes, right, you shouldn't treat Shabbos as just a weekday minus the amenities, a weekday minus the comforts, right? In your own eyes, right, there should be this appreciation that Shabbos is a cut above the rest of the week. Right? So if a person treats Shabbos like just another weekday, he'll come to pick up and fix utensils from corner to corner or room to room. Right? I don't know what it means. Hagbia ule taken. It's to fix.
Hagbia is no, the taken is to fix.
Yeah, I don't know why the word fix is there. I might translate it bias, middle of bias, as room to room. It could mean house to house. And or he'll get rid of racks and stuff like that, since he has nothing to do and he's sitting at home and searching for something to do. Mm-hmm. And in the end, he won't have rested at all on Shabbos. And he won't have fulfilled the spirit of the law that the Torah said in order that he should rest. Right, so that's how I rendered ubatel hatam. Right, a tam is a taste or a reason. Right, so basically, if a person were to just move around all the items that are mukta, he may have fulfilled the letter of the dinim de'oraisa of Shabbos, of the 39 melachos of mechamer, right, of kiddush v'havdalah, right, of zachar, but he won't have fulfilled the spirit of that law, which is to ensure that there's a time of rest, one time when the mind is sort of free from the burdens of the weekday, not simply to recharge, right, for the upcoming week in the sense of being well rested, but also to recharge spiritually, to reconnect, right, with ourselves and to reconnect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For that, there needs to be Lema'an Yanuach, that all of these laws are designed to promote a day of restfulness. Also, the Rambam says, if he checks out and moves a kli shemalachto le'isser, he may do something small with it, and he'll come to do malacha. Also, since some people don't work, and they're idle all the time, like tayalim,
people who like to walk all the time, you know, they like to
see. People who spend their days taking tiyulim. Okay, I don't think we have that category nowadays. But I guess that in those days that there were these people.
A leisure class,
right? Like when I saw the word, I was thinking like, you know, in Sherlock Holmes, sometimes you have these, you know, these clubs where gentlemen get together and they spend the whole day, whatever, you know, smoking their pipes and talking about whatever it is that people talk about it, you know.
That's the second one.
Oh, those are your speak for notes. Aha. Okay, so I. But I was actually surprised because in the Sifrei Chassidus, right, it says that for Lomdei Torah, right, for people who spend their day studying Torah, so every day is like Shabbos. Right, this is what it says in the Sifrei Chassidus, that basically you go to a yeshiva, right, and the Bachrim, just their job is just to sit and learn, to focus on spirituality, right, on self-development, on self-perfection, on greater understanding of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and everything that they need is taken care of, right, by others. That's the essence of a yeshiva, is that we understand that it's very important, right, you know, at the, you know, the critical developmental years and beyond, right, for people to have that type of environment where they're free from the pressures of conformity and they're free from the pressures, right, of earning their own keep, just in order to find spiritual grounding and discover, you know, who they are, right, as a, you know, spiritual, you know, religious human being. And so basically that's the state of Shabbos. You have that Shabbos once a week, but for people who are, you know, younger, some people, you know, even older, it's good for the community, right, to have a core of people, right, who really do spend their entire time, you know, working on this. That's also a category of people for whom even weekdays are like Shabbos.
How do you separate the Shabbos from weekdays?
That's the Rambam question. How do you separate Shabbos from weekdays? So here's what he says. So they rest from Malacha all the time. If they're allowed to walk like the other days of the week, and if they're allowed to talk like other days of the week, and if they're allowed to move things like other days of the week, so then their Shabbos rest will not be noticeable. In other words, they will have maybe appreciated the purpose of Shabbos, but they will not have broadcast it, because their conduct on Shabbos will be no different than their conduct during the week. And it's important not only to appreciate it ourselves, right, but also to communicate this message through our movements and through our conduct, right, and through our non-movements to others. And therefore, the Rambam says that there's concern that their Shabbos rest will not be noticeable. Therefore, resting from these things is a type of rest that is the highest common denominator. That he calls that in Hebrew, Shvita Hashava B'chal Adam. Right? A resting, right, which is equal for everybody. Right? It could be that some people are not going to be gardeners, and other people are not going to be weavers, and other people, right, are not going to be, you know, writers, and other people are not going to be builders. Right? And some people won't be any of the above categories. But he says that if you want a Shvisa Hashava B'chal Adam, a Shvisa which is equal for everybody, so Mukta is it, because everybody needs to move things at some point or other on Shabbos. Right? There's nobody who spends the entire Shabbos, right, in meditation, right, sitting, you know, cross-legged on a mat, right, the whole Shabbos. Everybody needs to move something, and when they don't, right, that is broadcasting that Shabbos is a different type of day, perhaps a more mindful type of day. But if he lives in a dormitory that's across the street from the yeshiva, right, so then he's not taking the train. The truth is that nowadays, with the preponderance of technology, so I think that this particular Hasidish idea is a little bit less observable in actual life, because, you know, everyone's got lights and they've got electricity and they've got, you know, pocket pens and stuff like that. But in the olden days, when it wasn't quite that way, and when people weren't just flipping the lights on and off themselves, somebody lit the candles, and not everybody had pens and paper, and you basically came to Beis Medrash, you studied, you ate, you went to, you know, you davened, you went to sleep, and then you woke up and came back to Beis Medrash and studied, ate, and davened, and went to sleep. You weren't doing so many malachos. Nowadays, we've just got, you know, our malacha, right, you know, switches everywhere, and so I think that even amongst, you know, Bnei Yeshiva, you don't really see this idea so much of Shvisa mi malacha. This is actually something, you know, worthwhile, you know, to think about in terms of Yehudas Hadoros and in terms of things like that. But you're definitely right that even for Bnei Yeshiva nowadays, you don't really see that Bechinas HaShabbos that you might have seen once perhaps long ago.
Less now than before.
Not now.
They used, in the 70s, you couldn't go into
this. When I was in yeshiva, I can tell you that for the 5 years that I was in yeshiva, I never saw anybody smoke, which, you know... And I also know that there was a rule that said you would get kicked out of the yeshiva if you smoked. So... No, this was in Shara Torah.
Really? Yeah.
Reb Zelig. Reb Zelig smoked a pipe. A cigar, not cigarette. And even he, you know, there was a reason that he, you know, that he did that, which is not applicable to to Bachrim. Anyhow, but there definitely was a rule like that. In yeshiva, and you know, the whole time that I was there, Eretz Yisrael, the situation is different. I remember I was very troubled by this when I visited Eretz Yisrael a few years ago, and I saw that there were so many Bnei Torah who were smoking. I had like a big Yitzhahara to say, you know, it may say in the Pasuk, you know, Shomer Pesayim Hashem, that God, you know, watches over, you know, fools, and that's the source. Right, that if many, many, many people are doing something which is detrimental to health, so halachically we can't paskin that it's forbidden. Right? But there's also very clear, right, it's very, very clear, I don't know if there's a pasuk for it, but it's usur for a ben Torah to be a fool. So, no, but the
Rav Moshe said that Shalom Sam Hashem, he only said it because there were many gedolim that you couldn't usur and say it's also because
so the RCA already wrote, you know, that they're positive that Rav Moshe nowadays would say that the society has changed already and that it's no longer, right, smoking is no longer included, right, under Shomer Pesayim Hashem in America. So in Israel, I actually asked somebody and I said, like, why is it that it's so preponderant? And he said, he gave me a very interesting explanation. He said that during the Israeli War of Independence, there were tremendous food shortages and starvation. And smoking apparently depresses the appetite and makes people feel less hungry. They said that people basically started to smoke during the war in order to calm the pangs of hunger that they were experiencing. And that's how it sort of entered the culture. It's not as if, like, somehow, you know, Bnei Torah and Israel just, you know, suddenly one day got up and said, hey, you know, let's start smoking. It actually has this legacy, right, during those, the food shortages, you know, during the war, and the community is still trying, you know, to kick the habit. I'm sure that Rabbi Litzman, right, is very well aware, right, of the detrimental effects of smoking, and I'm sure that it's somewhere on his list, right, together with all the other types of, you know, health awareness that he has been promoting, right, amongst all communities across, you know, the spectrum in Eretz Yisrael. I'm sure that this is one of the things that are on his list to combat.
I went to home too. We drew a lot of fuck up. You know, they look at me like I'm from Mars.
You are.
What?
Yeah. A different culture, but again, right, again, nowadays we perhaps don't see that Bechinas, you know, HaShabbos so much, you know, amongst the Bnei Torah. But again, the, you know, the Sfarim say that, you know, as close, you know, the ideal, right, for a Ben Torah is to live a Shabbistic lifestyle all week long, right? But on Shabbos it needs to be Shvisa Hanikeres Lakol, right, some sort of highest common denominator, which means that during the week, right, Yeshiva Bachur might talk about, you know, doing malachas, and they might, you know, walk, right, with wider steps, but on Shabbos, right, even maybe the Rambam left it out because that's the Yeshiva Bachrim are the only ones who have a heter to be Shabbistic all week long. I don't know, maybe that's why he only talked about Tayalim and Yosh Dekanos, you know, because for them it's not appropriate, you know, to behave with this exaggerated nobility. You have to think about it. So anyhow, he says, for these reasons the rabbis forbade moving muktzah and forbade moving any kli except those that are needed. So just take 2 minutes and see if you could just find where the Rambam, right, has these lines. Where does he talk about Shabbos being boring? What is he worried it will lead to? Where does he say that it's a special? It's important to feel the Shabbos is special. Where does he say that it's important to broadcast the Shabbos is special? And where does he say that he's worried that muktzah may lead to malacha? As I said, I'm pretty sure that, you know, everybody who is in the position to be a good influence, you know, on the community is doing their utmost, you know, to be a good influence. But you know, not, you know, but what they say, it's addictive, right? It's a habit that's caught on in the culture, and these type of things, they take time, you know, they take time to change.
Damaging you, it could be
also. Okay, so we have to have in mind, all we can do in America is when we say Rifa'inu Hashem v'nei Rafei, and we should have in mind that it should be a zechus for all those people.
I don't think
we have data.
He may not be smoking it.
It would be interesting to get data. What are the official policies? Right? There's hundreds of yeshivos in Eretz Yisrael. My guess is that many of these yeshivos actually have it in their policy. The same way that their rabbanim say that yeshiva balkam shouldn't be driving, right? And like, you know, you could get thrown out of yeshiva for driving because that's considered a sakana. Right, for teenagers in Israel, right, to be driving. So I suspect that many of these yeshivos, which do have a safety consciousness, maybe do have these type of rules in their handbooks as well. And I would be cautious about saying why don't until we have data to see whether it's actually not or whether it actually is. I think it would be worth collecting. Okay, so let's take a look now. We'll see how the Rambam perhaps is rooted in the Gemara. Right, because the Ravid actually challenges the Rambam. He says in the Gemara, the only reason that we find for Muktzah, right, is out of concern that you may come to carry. And yet the Rambam comes up with all these other reasons, right, for Muktzah. He says that it's in order to broadcast how special Shabbos is. It's in order to make sure, right, that a person keeps their mind, you know, free and doesn't just kind of distract themselves, you know, from the boredom with the wrong type of thing. Where does all this come from? So let's take a look, right, at the Gemara, and we'll get a little bit of a sense. Yeah, so this is basically, if you go to the narrow lines, and you go up six lines from the bottom of the narrow lines, right, the first word is Barishona. Barishona hayu omrim. At first they would say, Shlosha kelim nitalin b'Shabbos. There's only three things that are allowed to be moved on Shabbos, and those are, number one, Miktsoa, Shal Devela, a special type of knife that was used for cutting fig cakes. The Zuhamal Listerone, a special type of spoon that was used for skimming the fat off the top of chicken soup. And Sakin Katana, Shal Gabi Ashulchan, the small knife that goes on the table. I think that they didn't have forks and spoons back then, and they just ate everything by cutting with the knife and then spearing it with the knife and putting it into their mouth. So that's the Sakin Katana She'al Gabi Ashulchan. Yes?
When it says Barishona here, does that correspond to what sometimes referred to as Mishnah Rishona?
No. In this particular case, the Gemara is actually going to comment and explain this phrase. It means in the time of Shivat Zion, the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, when many Jews, the way the Aruch HaShulchan says it, right, that the many Jews became Mechalalei Shabbos over Galus Bavel. And even those Jews who were the you know, the most bold and courageous and spiritually committed, right? Meaning the ones who came back, who left behind all the comforts of Bavel and returned, right, to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild, you know, the Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim while they were still in ruins, that right? Even those Jews, right, sometimes had, you know, difficulties with Shmira Shabbos. And so the Psukim in Sefer Nechemiah describe how there used to be merchants. I don't know whether they were Jewish merchants or non-Jewish merchants or a combination of both. And they would come in the gates of Yerushalayim on Shabbos and they would conduct business as usual. It was a day that people would go to the markets and the malls and whatever it was and buy and sell and trade. And this was a legacy, a sad legacy of Galus Bavel. And Nechemiah, Ben Chachaya felt that the time, you know, had come to sort of, you know, now we were back and we were independent. There was no foreign culture, right, that needed to be mashkia on us, that we needed to be humble and beholden towards. And so he actually closed the gates of Yerushalayim before Shabbos began, and he posted a guard, right, who was close to him and was a Shomer Shabbos, right, to make sure that the gates stayed closed all Shabbos. And the merchants waited outside the gates. And, I don't know, did people amass inside? Did people not amass inside? Were there protests? We don't know exactly what happened. But in the end, Nechemiah prevailed. His guard kept the gate closed. I guess he was able to prevent most people from going out or coming in or whatever it was. And they had a quiet, peaceful Shabbos that was free from these types of transactions. Right, then the next Shabbos, the merchants came back. And again, Nechemiah locked the gate. And then when he saw that the merchants were waiting, he got up on top of the wall and he yelled at them. And he said to them, like, what are you doing? You're destroying the atmosphere of Shabbos. We're Jewish, we're Shomrei Shabbos. And find a different day of the week to conduct your trades. And he said the third Shabbos, the merchants didn't come back. So this was, this was already recorded in Tanakh, right? That that there was this tremendous widespread Chilul Shabbos, and Nechemiah needed to get up and stand in the breach. And the Gemara is going to say that this Gzeira of Muktzah, where you told people you're not allowed to move anything on Shabbos, that was part of that strategy to reintroduce an awareness of Shmira Shabbos, right, into the public consciousness. And he did it in the most dramatic way possible. Everything is Muktzah. Right, but then, as people became more and more comfortable and more accustomed to Shmira Shabbos, he was able to slowly repeal different parts of that draconian Muktzah law. And there were four different times that Nechemiah and his Beis Din convened, and four different times they repealed different parts of the Muktzah law. Now, the repeals are going to be complicated because they were one after the other, and there's a machlokas about what exactly was repealed at each stage. So I'll tell you halacha lemaisa. Right, this is we pass in like Rava. So we'll go through Abaye's understanding of what the four repeals are very quickly, and then we'll slow down when we get to Rava's understanding. But the word Barishona is talking about that first time, right, when Nechemiah expanded, right, the Gzeira of Muktzah to cover everything but these three things. So it says Hitiru. They permitted, in other words, they repealed some of the Muktzah laws, v'chazru v'yitiru, and then they repealed some more, v'chazru v'yitiru, and then they repealed some more, ad, until the final repeal, when they said, sha'amru kol ha'kelim nitalim b'shabbos, you can move anything which has the status of a kli, again, usable, reusable, right, and various other characteristics, chut min meser ha'gadol v'yasei shal macharesha, except for the saw and the plow, and those are Muktzah machmas. So the Gemara asks, "Ma'i hitiru v'chazru v'tiru v'chazru v'tiru?" What are the four repeals? And again, Abaye's explanation we're just going to read through very, very quickly. Amar Abaye, hitiru darash malach leheter the tzorech gufo. First, they permitted malach leheter, right, like glasses, and you can wear your glasses now, right? The magnifying glass, right? You can read with a magnifying glass now. Paper was never, right, so with printing on it was never usur. Right, but okay, so their watches, right, and they can move around their coffee tables and chairs and stuff like that.
A table.
Oh, so that's a good point. We're gonna even Abaye and Rava both are gonna agree that the first three repeals were only light objects. Anything that needed two hands to move, they're going to say, was still barred and banned under the first three repeals, and it was only the final repeal which permitted people to move heavy objects, things that required two hands to move. Right? I think that's where the Rambam got this idea, right, that muktza and menucha, right, leman yanuach, restfulness, right, are connected to one another. Otherwise, what's the difference between something light, right, and something heavy? You must have understood, right, that the idea of muktza is designed, right, to prevent, to preserve the restful character of Shabbos, which is why there's more reason to forbid heavy muktza than there is to forbid light muktza. But right now, right, we're only permitting things, so you're right, tables were not permitted. Right, under this, the kli, I'm not 100% sure about, right, it might, even if it doesn't have a base kibble, right, but it may still be manufactured, it's still usable, it's reusable, so it may fit the definition of a kli, but it's too heavy. Yeah, I don't think that's a problem. So, yeah, usually it's like folding and unfolding a stroller. Yeah. So again, Abayi says the first one is Davar Shemalachte Leheter, right, Letzorech Gufo. Then Chazru V'Tiru, the second repeal, Davar Shemalachte Leheter, Letzorech Mikomo, if you need its place. Right, third, Chazru V'Tiru, Davar Shemalachte Leiser, Letzorech Gufo, that's like the hammer to crack nuts with. Right, and finally, the Adayin, the Yado Achas In, B'Shtei Yadav Lo, you can only move things that were light enough to move with one hand. Right, ad shamru, until they said kol hakelim nitalim b'shabbos, everything can be moved. Afilu b'shtei yadayim, even things that take two hands, right, or even two people to move. So that's Abaye's theory, right, which we don't paskin like, because Abaye basically says that the kli shemalachtoi leiser letzorech mikomo, right, the hammer is on the floor. You're afraid someone's going to trip on it. Abaye says you can't move it. Right, or the hammer's on your table, on your counter, and you need the counter to prepare, right, a salad or something like that. Abaye is going to say you can't move it. We don't paskin like Abaye. We paskin like Rava, who's more expansive. Amar le Rava. Rava says mechti. Let's see. Hetiru katani. It says that they permitted. Mali le tzorach gufo. Mali le tzorach mekomo. Tzorach gufo, tzorach mekomo, Rava says, are the same exact thing. This is going to be very, very important. When we get the Kuf Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, Rava says, Mali Tzorach Gufo, Mali Tzorach Mekomo, they're the same exact thing. When you need something, whether you need something to actually use it, right, or whether you need something in order to use the space that it's occupying, Rava says, doesn't make a difference. Both of those are Tzorach Shabbos, right, you need to move it for the purposes, right, of Shabbos, and therefore it's going to be permitted, right, the way that the Chazon Ish, you know, says it is that it's normal, right? People expect to move things if they need to use them. People expect to move things if they need the space, right? And therefore, the two are substantially, right, equivalent. Whatever the svar is, right, Rava is drawing this equation. Mali Tzorach Gufo, Mali Tzorach Mekomo, what difference does it make? One is the other, right? The other is one, they're the same thing. They're both Hiltel Letzorach. So therefore, Ella Amar Rava revises what the repeals are, and he says, no, this is the correct history of the law. Hitiru, the first thing that they repealed was Davar Shemalachte Leheter, Bein Letzorech Gufo, Bein Letzorech Mekomo, whether for the space, whether to use it itself, right, as long as there's a Tzorech, right, we permitted in the first repeal, Kli Shemalachte Leheter for any Tzorech. Then Chazru v'Yitiru, they went back and they repealed more. They said, Michama Letzel. You're even allowed to move a Kli Shemalachto Leheter, even if you don't need it, just to prevent it from getting damaged. You're allowed to move it as well. Then Chazru v'Yitiru, they made a third repeal, Davar Shemalachto Leiser, Letzorech Gufo U Letzorech Mekomo. Again, that's the hammer to crack knots, or because you need its space. And then finally, right, but you could do it for Tzorach Gufo and Mekomo, but Michama Letzel lo, they never permitted Kli Shemalachto Leiser, right, to prevent it from getting damaged. Right, that's from the sun to the shade, if the sun is going to cause it to get damaged. Right, that's the idea of Michama Letzel, to prevent it from damage. V'adayin, and still Ba'adam Echad In, B'shnei B'nei Adam lo, it was only permitted when it's light enough for one person to carry. Ad Sha'amru, until the final repeal, they said, Kol hakelim nitalim b'shabes. Everything can be moved. Afilu b'shnei b'nei adam. Abaye said afilu b'shnei yadayim. Right? Rava says afilu b'shnei b'nei adam. Even something that's so heavy that it requires two people to move it.
Let's so Abaye, so Rava would say that Abaye, Rava would say that Abaye, his category was too restricted.
There's two practical cases which are a difference between Abaye and Rava. Case number one, like Klisha Malachto Leheter and Mechama Letzel. If you have, let's say, a pair of glasses and they're lying on the floor, they're not yours, so you don't need actually to use them, and they're lying, let's say, underneath the couch, and so you don't really need the space, but you see that there's a baby crawling along, and you know babies love to dismember pairs of glasses. So according to Abaye, Abaye would say, sorry, you just got to let those glasses get ruined, because that's mechama letzel. You're not allowed to save even kli shemalachto leheter, right? If you don't need to use it, right, or to use its space. Rava would say, no, it's malachto leheter. Right? You're not going to do a malacha with the glasses, right? You can't use the glasses, right, to do boneh, right, or planting, right, or sewing, or anything else, right? It's kli shemalachto leheter. Its main use, its intended use, is something that's permitted on Shabbos. Therefore, Rava says, you're allowed to move it even to prevent it from damage. So that's one machlokas between Abaye and Rava, klisha malachto leheter, right, mechama letzel. The second point of contention is klisha malachto leiser letzorech mikomo. So again, somebody put down their, somebody left the phone on the counter and need the counter now to prepare a salad. Right? Somebody left the calculator on my chair, right? So I need the chair, right, for sitting on. So again, Abaye would say it's malachto le'isser. A calculator, right, is something whose intended function is forbidden on Shabbos. And you don't need to use the calculator to crack nuts. You don't need to use it as a paperweight. You just need to get rid of it so you can sit on your chair. Abaye would say that's a problem. Klisha malachto le'isser, the tzorech mikomo is aser. We don't pass in that way. We pass in like Rava, who says that klisha malachto le'isser, the tzorech mikomo, right, is allowed. Right. So again, as you discover on your Shabbos table, right, that somebody left, you know, something kli, which is mukta, right, a pen, right, or a computer, right, or a phone, or or any other sort of mukta item which is kli shemalachta le'isser, as long as it's not mukta machmas tesum kis, so you'd be allowed to move it, assuming that you need the space on your Shabbos table to put down sparim or to put down, you know, food, dishes of food and stuff like that. You would be allowed to move that kli shemalachta le'isser. That's how we paskin at the end of the day. Can you move a leichter on Shabbos? So that's a complicated question. There's six categories of mukta, and one of those categories is called mukta machmas iser. So if I'll say this, if the leichter was not lit during Bein HaShemashos, then I believe that you can move it. Right? However, if the leichter was lit during Bein HaShemashos, So then it's a problem. I'll say the way that Rav Shlomo Zalman says it is that the flame is mukta machmas gufo because it's not a kli, and the leichter is a basis, right, for the flame because it's supporting the flame and it's designed to support the flame. Therefore, during Bein HaShemashos, the leichter was a basis, right, for mukta machmas gufo, and the basis always takes on the status of whatever object it's supporting. So that's why there's an extra problem for a leichter, but not because the leichter itself, right, is mukta. You're absolutely right that an unlit leichter would be a kli shemalachta le'isser, and it would be movable letzorech mekomo. But a leichter that was lit during Bein HaShemashos is not just a kli shemalachta le'isser. It's a basis for mukta machmas gufay. And therefore, it's not going to be movable, just like a rack is not movable, just like a flame is not movable, that the leichter will also not be movable.
So, if the flame is gone,
right, so again, the rules of buses are all established during Bein HaShemashos. The garbage pail that we discussed yesterday, if it was clean during Bein HaShemashos, so then it's movable the whole Shabbos. Right, more or less, right? But if it had garbage in it during Bein HaShemashos, so then it became a basis and it cannot be moved the whole Shabbos. Because the point is that you're prepared. right? You know, what did you do before Shabbos in order to make this mutter? You wanted to use this leichter, make sure before Shabbos that it's not a basis for anything. If you made it a basis right before Shabbos, that means that your plan for this Shabbos was that the leichter is going to be stationary. Yeah, but right, what some people do is they put Well, on the leichter, it's a little bit awkward to put something on the leichter, but if the leichter's on a tray, and you put something valuable on a tray, that's your preparation. Now you are prepared. You have done some active preparation before Shabbos in anticipation of moving that tray right, once the candles go out, and so as long as you've done that, so you would be allowed to move the leichter via the tray. You can move the tray, right? Don't touch the leichter, right? But pick up the tray with a leichter on it, right? Assuming you have the type of tray that can balance a leichter, right? And then you can move it, provided that there was something expensive, like a sefer or a challah roll or an engagement ring or something like that, on the tray during Bein HaShemashos.
What's the leichter?
A candelabra.
Okay.
What's
the tray though?
Because you're not Jewish, you don't know anything.
Oh.
You know,
for the table.
Whatever they told me to.
That's why you have a towel on the table or the table.
So,
what is that about having something on the tray?
Right, exactly. Put like a piece of jewelry on the tray, aside from the leichter. Now, the tray is a basis for the jewelry, and it's a basis for the flame. But as long as it's a basis for a mutter thing, jewelry, and an asher thing, the flame, we treat it like a basis for the mutter thing.
So absent something that's mutter on the tray, then you can't remove the tray.
Right, then the tray and the leichter and the table all become a basis for the flame, and if they were basis during Bein HaShemashos, so then they remain a basis for the whole Shabbat, even after the flame goes out. It needs to be that active preparation before Shabbos starts, right, where you deliberately put something mutter onto the tray in order to make it a basis for davar hamutter. There's a reason why the post can recommend those three things that I say, which is either jewelry, right, or a sefer, or a roll. The reason is because when something is a basis for two different things, so sometimes one of those two can outweigh the other. And it might be because this is what the basis is meant to support, but it might also be because this is the more expensive, right, or more precious, you know, to you item. So we want to make sure that, okay, the leichter probably is, you know, I don't know what leichters go for, you know, nowadays. It probably can go anywhere from a few hundred to a few $1,000s. So that's pretty expensive. So either you want to put something like an engagement ring, which might be more precious to you, right, or to your wife, than the leichter. So that would be one way of doing it. And or you want to put a sefer, which even if in reality, right, if you had to sacrifice, you know, the sefer or the leichter, perhaps you would sacrifice, you know, the sefer, but at the same time, in some sort of an ideal, you know, world, we do have this appreciation that the sefer is more valuable, right, than the leichter, right? There was a friend of my in-laws who asked my Vart when he introduced himself. He said, you know, I used to be a Rebbe, right, but now I'm a diamond merchant, but I used to deal with gems, but now I just deal with stones. Which is a very, you know, it's a very beautiful line, but it's that same sort of an idea that even if, right, the leichter might be financially, you could pawn it for more money than the sefer, but we do have this understanding that a sefer in actuality, right, is more valuable than the leichter. And the same thing with that roll, you know, for the Shabbos meal, right, the roll is probably the worst of the three, right, but there is that same idea that because, you know, the Lechem Mishnah, right, has, you know, is so imbued with symbolic significance, that you know, it takes on an importance that's equal to the leichter in spite of the disparity in you know, in monetary value. Okay. So maybe if you appreciate the salt properly, maybe you could use a salt shaker too. Yes.
One time ago, Rabbi Tassir put out a DVD. It's called A Diamond with a Flaw. Not a gem. But a diamond, you know, and has a flaw because when he's refining it, needs to be improved, but it's still done.
Yeah, that's they say every neshama, right? Every neshama, right? It's a diamond, and a person doesn't, you know, see that. You know, this was a rabbi who clearly, you know, successful in chinuch. If you use every child as a gem. So this is basically, right? What you know, what Rava is saying. That again, the klisha malachtoi leisser even is allowed to be moved with tzorech mekomo. Again, provided it's not, you know, muktza machmas mios or chesur and kis, right, or a basis, you know, for muktza machmas gufo. So you're allowed to move it. That's how we paskin the maskana. But we will discuss perhaps next week is what happens if it's klisha kol malachtoi leisser. In other words, a calculator might be different from a hammer because a hammer. Some people use for cracking coconut. Has anybody here used a calculator for cracking coconut?
No, I use it for cracking hay.
The good at cracking coconut is the old one.
Yeah,
the old one. Better one?
The hard one, better one.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
So post-gym discuss. You know, is there any use of a calculator that's permitted on Shabbos that people actually use calculators for? Do people use calculators as paperweights?
No.
You can use anything for a paperweight.
You could use anything for a paperweight, but do people use calculators as paperweights? No. The problem is we'll discuss it. We'll discuss it more in depth, you know, next week. Okay, so it's possible then that the calculator would not be kol malachtoi leisser. There is this category of something which nobody ever uses for a purpose that's allowed to be used on Shabbos for, and that might be different. A phone. I was debating whether it was a good example or not. Poskim talk about because there are some people who can keep the time screen of their phone on, right, the entire time, and theoretically then you could use the phone just as a clock, right, on the wall. Right, there are some people who can transform their phones into these digital picture frames, right, and you know you could put it onto a stand, right, on a china table or something, and then it can display pictures, and so that would be a permissible use. Right, of a phone, right, on Shabbos. Maybe I should expunge that from the record, but I... Okay, so
because
consider...
Because was trying to get the halachic smartphone for Shabbos. You didn't hear about it?
So consider it expunged, but so let's consider a phone, a klisha kol malachtoi leisser, and nobody uses it for something which is permitted on Shabbos. It's only used, and it's universally used, for things that are forbidden on Shabbos. So it's a kli, right? It's usable, it's reusable, it's highly processed, it has many other characteristics of a kli as well, but it's kol malachtoi leisser. It's not necessarily mukta machmas chesur and kis, but it's kol malachtoi leisser, and that's a big discussion, whether we treat that as mukta machmas gufoy, because for all intents and purposes, it is useless on Shabbos, right, or whether we treat it as a regular klisha malachtoi leisser. Again, that's more for next week. Tomorrow, what we're going to consider is the extent of being allowed to move klisha malachtoi leheter letzorach gufo and klisha malachtoi leisser letzorach gufo. Does it apply even if there's a ready alternative? Like, for example, if I'm reading the Torah and I've got this yad, right, it's not here, but somewhere around here, there's a yad, right, I have the yad. Here it is. And I have the yad. Can I use my pen, right? If I have the yad right here, right? Is that allowed or is that not allowed? Is it tzorech because I need something to point at the letters with, or is it not tzorech because I've got this to point at the letters with? So why am I allowed to use this? But that raises the question, right? If I can't use the pen because I can use the pointer, then maybe I can't use the pointer because I can use my finger. Right? So is this really klisha malachtoi leheter with tzorech gufo? But I need it? I need to use it? I don't need to use it. I can use my finger. So maybe even the pointer is now let's so ref, and that's gonna be tomorrow's discussion, right, in your system. Have a great day.
Shkoyo.